Before we get started, we're going to be saying wake words for Amazon's smart speaker a lot in this episode. So if you have that kind of smart speaker, you'll probably want to press its mute button.
A couple of nights ago, my husband and I both started awake. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning and our bedroom was full of eerie blue light. First, I looked out the window because I needed to know if it was an alien invasion. But then I looked over at Alexa. There it was, tossing light everywhere because it was awake. Of course, the husband and I had an argument. Andrew was convinced someone was listening. He didn't know if it was a hacker or someone at Amazon.
They do listen to recordings over there, you know, to improve Alexa's responsiveness. But Carolyn, they're not interested in what you sound like in your sleep. Maybe the echo was just updating or something. Or maybe you said Alexa in your dreams.
As if. I just wanted to go back to sleep, so I told him that no one was listening. But then I couldn't go back to sleep because I didn't know. It got me thinking about the worst case scenario. And I have to ask you, how safe am I from hackers in my own home?
Funny you should have this happen, because I've just been researching all this. We've been talking so much this season about, like, the increasing control we're giving Alexa to manage our lives. And it made me wonder, can Alexa be hacked? So I started hanging out with hackers a few months ago. From KUOW in Seattle, this is Primed, a podcast about how Amazon is changing life as we know it. I'm Joshua McNichols.
And I'm Carolyn Adolph.
When people worry about Alexa or smart devices in their homes, they're often thinking about surveillance. But is that the thing we should really be worrying about? In this episode, we'll hack an Echo Dot ourselves in many different ways. We'll saw it apart, steal some credentials, and tear into the biggest breach of all. All to see if it withstands our assault like a tiny black fortress or collapses like a little black souffle. Poof! Carolyn, can you identify this sound?
So actually, it's almost the opposite. So if you look very closely, you see there's little metal wires on the other side of that chip.
Well, it reminds me of an all-you-can-eat night at a lobster restaurant.
It does kind of sound like a lobster, right?
Yeah.
It's the sound of hackers taking off the bottom of an Amazon Echo Dot. My Echo Dot.
I get half a point. You were cracking a shell.
We'll get back to their attack on my Dot in a minute, but first let me set the scene for you. I'm at a hardware hacker meetup in Seattle, and it's in this office suite after hours. There's like 19 men and one woman who are eating pizza from greasy paper plates. Mm. Most of them look about college age.
Is this Amazon territory?
It's really close to Amazon. Mm-hmm. A guy named Ben Kurtz gives an introduction and describes a few of the wire cutters and soldering irons he's brought along on a big cart tonight. And then he leads them through a hands-on exercise.
So, who wants to do voting machine stuff?
Voting machines?
Yep.
So, no election loaded. When I actually got this thing from eBay, it did show up with a card in it that had some election data from an Indiana election. So that was pretty interesting.
I'll say, did they manage to break into it?
They did.
Oh, you already figured out what to do.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I don't need to tell you nothing. Here, you just got a. We need a USB
just
cable.
Just the connector.
Yeah.
But you know what's much more challenging? Breaking into an Amazon Echo Dot. People there brought various devices to try and penetrate.
Okay. So, who brought a target of their own? Awesome. Who needs a target?
Somebody wants to take apart these dots. They're up for grabs, too.
Cool. So
the instructor, Ben Kurtz, gave everybody a pep talk before they got all hands-on.
As it turns out, this job is ridiculously easy. I'm not really that smart. Like, he knows.
He said that all electronic devices are flawed. Find the flaw, and you've found your way in.
So really, all it is you just get over the fear. Like, there's always a bug. Always. Because it's all made by people. They're all basically phoning it in. I mean, I've had a job, right? Like, not many people are trying that hard.
And then Kyle Pellet and Brady Clockengo went to work on my dots. They removed the plastic chassis.
So we need to remove these pins.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They should
be able to. Looks like we need a special screwdriver for this.
Inside the dot, they find a circular circuit board with LED lights and tiny microphones mounted around the perimeter. On the board, on top of all the squiggly circuitry, there's an 8-gig memory chip by Samsung and a processor by MediaTek. That's the brains. That's where the firmware runs, the computer code that makes the device work. Kyle and Brady have a goal here, to make this Echo talk to a laptop. Kurtz says that's the first step in trying to control the device.
You want to dump the firmware, reverse engineer it, and then figure out how you can attack similar units without having to take them apart.
But it's not going to be easy. They're going to have to solder hair-thin wires onto tiny connection points on a circuit that's quite packed already.
It's crazy. Okay, so.
So who's got a steady hand?
Basically, what's in my kit?
I do.
You do?
Oh, yeah,
you used to do this.
I'm feeling pretty sensitive about people messing around inside these devices. How are they getting away with this?
Maybe I wasn't clear. Like, these guys are the good guys. They're white hat hackers.
Well, I'm assuming these white hats are metaphorical. What's behind the name?
Well, in old cowboy movies, the bad guys would wear black hats.
Keep your hands on top of the table, all of you. From now on, we're ruling by right of might.
And the hero would wear a white hat.
I'm afraid you're wrong.
In our case, white hat hackers are trying to save the day by spotting flaws before the bad guys do. A black hat hardware hacker, on the other hand, is trying to co-opt a device for some more suspicious purpose. Like, they might target an Echo in a hotel room or in an Airbnb, you know, to try to steal your identity. White hat hackers are kind of in a race against the black hats. Brady Clockenga is one of the white hats at the meetup.
We kind of have this moral responsibility to find those vulnerabilities, because if somebody's going to do it, whether you're doing it for good reasons or doing it for bad. So us as people that are trying to make the technology world a better place, it is kind of our responsibility to push those boundaries.
Also, they say it's just fun to see how stuff works. And you can turn this kind of knowledge into a career in information security. It's kind of like learning to win a gunfight so you can become a sheriff in one of those cowboy movies.
Okay, so maybe now I'm cheering for them. How did they do? Did they get into the Echo?
They didn't. But they're confident that an Echo will be breached at some point.
Easy to hack? I would say no, but possible to hack, absolutely.
They're optimistic because they're part of a movement that's bigger than them. Ben Kurtz says once a new smart device is released, hackers around the world start trying to break into it. White hats, and some black hats too, publish their results online, like rock climbers publishing a favorite climbing route. Others refine the route or extend it. In this case, these hackers are following a workflow laid out by a British hacker, but he wasn't able to fully penetrate an Echo. He failed to gain control of its firmware. In his blog, he basically said, "I led you this far. It's up to the hacking community to push further."
Oh, like when the sheriff's been shot in the leg and he tosses his gun to the deputy in the hope that he'll be able to restore law and order. Well, okay, I like your Western analogies.
What these hardware hackers were doing in this tiny room is important. By revealing the flaws, hackers point the way for manufacturers to fix them. Do you remember that Bloomberg article called "The Big Hack"?
I think so, but remind me.
What exactly have we found out?
According to our reporting, a unit of China's People's Liberation Army implanted malicious microchips on computer servers bound for U.S. companies.
If this is true, this is the holy grail of hacking.
You cannot get rid of it without throwing the machine away.
Nearly impossible to counter.
It's in many ways the ultimate silent attack.
And it opens every one of us up.
Now, those computer servers wound up in very targeted, very large companies, including Apple.
Apple strongly denying that report.
And Amazon.
Well, Apple and Amazon are fighting back against claims that Chinese spy chips have infiltrated their hardware.
Well, the article accused China of doing hardware hacking of its own. This was a huge story, and then it became a huge headache for Bloomberg because everybody denied it. Amazon, Apple, but Bloomberg didn't back down. And for the hacker community, that story was like blood in the water, and they set out to prove it could be done.
So, Tremel Hudson, who is standing here, he's taking things apart.
This is a presentation at a hacker convention in Leipzig, Germany, in December of 2018. They're introducing a hardware hacker.
He will give us a proof of concept and some details and functionalities about hardware implants. So the same things that we heard from Bloomberg article talking about Apple.
This guy implanted a tiny chip on a computer circuit board.
This is where I'm going to try a live demo, and I hope this works.
And then live on stage, he hijacked it.
And then in a second, we should see a bunch of traffic. Okay, so the implant is active. It has replaced the data.
I'll skip ahead to the end.
Okay, it starts the KVM stuff. Brings up some things. All right.
The reason this is a big deal and the reason all these people are applauding is he now has godlike powers to control the circuit board. He could, you know, tell it what to do with its different parts. If it had microphones, it could tell it how to use the microphones, you know, stuff like that. He basically demonstrated it could be done.
But this wasn't on an Echo that he was working, right?
No, it was a computer chip for a larger machine. But this is why I'm telling you this story. That technique he showed could be adapted to all kinds of smart devices.
So should I be worried?
Maybe, maybe not. There's a database online that keeps track of various known hardware vulnerabilities. It says it would take yet another hack on top of this hack to compromise an Amazon Echo Dot. It's a sign that Amazon takes security very seriously. But there are smaller manufacturers who make devices that work with Alexa, and some of them are still in startup mode, and they're prone to make newbie mistakes.
Like what?
Well, there was this dumb mistake where a smart light bulb manufacturer stored users' Wi-Fi passwords, unencrypted, in the light bulb. So, like a tech-savvy thief rummaging through your garbage could get on your network.
Knock yourself out.
Most smart light bulb manufacturers have patched that problem now. But there are tons of Alexa-compatible smart plug manufacturers, for example, that are trying to undercut each other's prices online. As more and more smart home devices roll out, other problems will come up, and hackers will hold the manufacturers accountable.
So, as a non-hacker, what am I to conclude from this?
An Echo is more secure than an electronic voting machine, because Amazon has very good cyber hygiene, but it plays with manufacturers that forget to wash their hands.
Somehow I do not find that metaphor comforting. But it seems unlikely that a thief who breaks into my house would waste their time soldering wires into my Echo or trying to harvest a password from an old discarded light bulb. They're more likely to just steal my tiny jewelry collection and be off, right?
But hardware hacking is only one kind of invasion that happens. It turns out there's a much easier way to get into a house than knocking down the front door.
What?
Trick someone into giving you the key. That's coming up next. Hey, Carolyn, I think I found it. Do you want to come over here for a sec? Do you remember that email I clicked on? The fishy one?
What is it?
Okay, so I got this email here. It says Amazon Prime Member Deals. Maybe that's it. Okay, let's see. Yeah, they've got some shop all deals. It looks like it's got voice recorders on sale.
For $15, that's not bad.
That might be a cheap voice recorder, though.
I remember that email. It looked like it came from Amazon, and it was advertising ridiculously great deals on recording equipment.
That's the one.
I was out of my mind thinking, don't click on it, Joshua. Don't click on it.
Yeah, it was a phishing attempt created by this guy.
So like most phishing emails, it creates a false sense of urgency to get a victim to take action.
So who is this guy?
That's Jack Koziol. He's a hacker who went on to start a big security firm called InfoSec.
We are the world's largest cybersecurity education platform.
He told me 80% of people who get hacked get lured in by phishing attempts sent through email or social media. It's an old-school technique, but the perpetrators keep getting better at it. Koziol customized an email around my interests that tricked me into entering my Amazon login information. I should put tricked in quotes, though, because I knew this was coming. We had prearranged the whole thing.
I'm surprised there were no chicken diapers in that email.
My goal was to see what a hacker could do to my smart home if he or she managed to get into my Amazon account.
But how did you know you could trust this guy?
He wrote a book on ethical hacking.
Okay, that's a good reason.
And he runs a company that helps people guard against hacks. So he's kind of staked his reputation on being known as a white hat hacker.
So what was he able to do?
The next morning at home, my family was going through our normal morning routine. The theme to Twin Peaks was playing in the bathroom, indicating it's my son's turn to shower. And then suddenly, the music switched to the living room where my daughter and I were hanging out.
The screen keeps changing.
And then the song changes to this.
Oh, you stuck. Oh.
What is that?
It's Motorhead. Koziol told me what was going on behind the scenes at the InfoSec office in Chicago. An employee named Cameron Bulanda was having a lot of fun. You can hear him at work. They recorded it.
Okay. So right now, we're taking a look at all their devices. We'll start by maybe turning off the couch light that they have going on there.
And back in Seattle, the lights blinked on and off.
Oh, the light just turned up.
The lights turned up?
This light just turned up.
Later, Koziol gave me a description of what was happening at each step. Using just the Alexa app, Bulanda made a complete list of all my smart home devices and their addresses on the web.
So now he's got his lay of the land. You know, it's much like a criminal broke into your house. They're going to look around and see what's in there, see what's valuable.
He saw my home address, my work address, my phone number, and some locations I'd recently visited. Bulanda changed the music to Thriller and then spied on me through my Echo's camera to see how I liked it.
So let's just see what they think about that. Let's drop in on the Echo screen. Let's give it a moment.
Yeah.
And there he is with his daughter.
He makes my head hurt.
You like Michael
Jackson? He's okay.
Bulanda was just getting started.
And then we can go to anything from his contacts that he has on here. I actually inputted myself in there as a malicious hacker and gave myself drop-in privileges, so if I wanted to go from a different phone, I could go in there and do that.
Later, Koziol told me this is one of the first things that hackers do. They put in a back door so that if they get kicked out, they can get back in again.
I'm not comfortable with this. That sounds horrible.
But he's not done, right? In the Alexa app, there was a lot for Bulanda to learn about.
Some of his reminders, alarms. We have his list, his shopping list. So we noticed that he's trying to find black programmable deck lights. So we really could craft some sort of malicious phishing email based on that information that I think could really hook him.
The more he looked around, the more he saw to do.
And then we could always set a routine maybe if we wanted to wake him up in the middle of the night or turn on all of his lights when he's gone and cause, you know, a higher electric bill. Small stuff like that really starts to add up. And he wouldn't even know if we were able to turn it off before he got home.
It's scary how easy this is.
Yeah.
Back in my home, my daughter and I, we were amused by the whole experience. It was kind of like being in the world's lamest haunted house. Like, we even had our own DJ. But Koziol told me I should take this more seriously.
I'd say the risk is pretty high. You know, if I'm targeting you and I have some specific goals, let's say I want to steal your bank account information, or I want to gather information about you to discredit you in public, there's probably going to be a lot of information in there that's going to help me achieve my goals.
Thanks a lot. This is living up to my nightmares.
Koziel said most hacks start with a theft of credentials, like with the email that got me. Many of us know not to click on suspicious emails like that, but we may be less wary of suspicious skills. A skill is like an app that runs on Alexa, and Alexa's skills marketplace is full of skills where it's hard to tell if they're legit because they have maybe one review. Koziel described a famous case where a white hat hacker found a way to hide in this marketplace.
In their case, they made a calculator.
But after you asked this calculator a question, like to multiply two numbers, it turned into a listening device.
And it could sit and record for hours.
Sending the recordings to the hacker. In another case, white hat hackers at the University of Illinois created a skill called Amex.
And people thinking they were installing the American Express app, they would say to load Amex, and it would load this nefarious application.
As we grant Alexa and Google and Apple more and more power, Koziel says there's going to be more and more payoff for hackers to find new ways in.
So what is Amazon doing to stop all this?
Well, they're listening to white hat hackers when they bring vulnerabilities like this to them. That's enabled them to catch problems before they go live. The skills I described to you were built in a protected sandbox environment, so they never actually listened in on any real users. After Amazon learned about the vulnerabilities, they changed how they review skills and made it harder for a skill like this to escape scrutiny.
Thank goodness they listened to the hackers.
Amazon's recent record on security is pretty tight. I checked a database of hacks called CVE Details, which bills itself as the ultimate security vulnerability data source. In 2018, it listed 25 known vulnerabilities on Amazon products. And in 2019, it listed only one.
So the number's going way down.
Yeah. It's clear Amazon's pushing really hard on security issues, but its protective umbrella only goes so far. More on that after the break. So we've seen two different classes of ways that hackers can break into your devices at home. There's sheer force, that's one way. And then there's this other class, which is tricking you into giving them your passwords or getting you to install a nefarious skill. But there's another category, and maybe that's the scariest, because the massive amount of data stored in the clouds gives hackers even more payoff for worming past computers' defenses. We're talking about breaches. Say you have a Capital One credit card. You can ask Alexa to make a payment on your credit card bill. Capital One's Pete Varvarezis demonstrated the skill on stage at an Amazon conference in 2016. And then something funny happened when he was showing off another thing the skill could do. Keep in mind, the conference was in Las Vegas, and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right?
One hopes.
Your payment has been scheduled. What's next?
List my transactions.
Here are your recent transactions for your Visa business account. A transaction of $1,971.64.
Alexa.
Hotel casino.
Alexa.
Purchase.
Alexa.
At the Grand Lux Cafe.
Cancel.
Okay, but you didn't have to yell.
That just goes to show how much information Capital One and Alexa have about you.
It's weird you used Capital One as an example because I think of them as the company that was involved in that massive data breach.
Yes, that's why I picked them. Capital One could face huge damages from pending lawsuits around that breach.
But that data didn't come from an Amazon Echo, right?
No, and this helps us understand a crucial difference. When data is controlled by Amazon, you know, like when Amazon is processing your commands to an Echo or listening to you, Amazon protects that information from hackers. But once that information leaves Amazon's direct control, then it's somebody else's responsibility. When you use skills on Alexa, skills that are made by other companies, your personal data begins a long journey, and that data has a lot of different owners along the way. And not every owner practices the same level of vigilance. For example, Say you ask Alexa to pay your Capital One credit card bill. As Alexa listens and translates your words into commands, Alexa is protecting all the data from hackers. But eventually, that data passes into Capital One's control.
Earlier, when you were talking about hardware hacking, it was the fly-by-night light bulb manufacturers that created the most risk for users. It's kind of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not Amazon, but companies that work with Amazon.
Exactly. I reached out to Amazon, and they want you to know how seriously they take security. Their whole reputation is built on it.
Hi, my name is Damien Haas. I'm the director of digital security at Amazon.
Haas told me I didn't need to worry about security either, because whether the danger comes from compromised hardware or like a shady skill programmer, there's always something to stop them.
Security is like an onion from my perspective. Why am I saying an onion? Because it has multiple layers. And when I think about security, it's multiple layers of security, right? We go from the hardware all the way to the backend services. So if you peel one layer of security, boom, there's another one there that holds you back. And then the attacker or whatnot needs to be able to penetrate that other layer to go deeper and try to kind of get to that data or whatever they're trying to get to. And if we have done our job correctly, then there are so many layers that it gets so difficult that the return on investment might not necessarily be there for the researcher.
Haas said his team adds new layers to the onion by attending hacker conferences and listening to the hacker community. In some cases, they pay bounties to hackers.
A bounty? So we're back to the Westerns.
Yeah. A bounty is when a tech company pays a fee to encourage hackers to turn over their discoveries before mentioning them in public. But that active protection that tech companies like Amazon do has a limit. And that limit is when the data flows beyond Amazon's control. Like, Carolyn, if I let someone hack my Gmail account, would you blame me or Google?
Well, you.
Right. And similarly, if your Alexa account gets phished, like mine, or if you leave your data unprotected, like Capital One may have, the responsibility's on you. For Amazon, there's a clear red line here, and it's a line that exists for almost all big tech companies. They argue, when a house gets robbed, you blame the person who gave the keys to a stranger or the person who left the front door open. You don't blame the person who built the house.
That's fine, but I wish the tech companies would protect me from phishing.
Haas said they do scan for suspicious intrusions that look like a phishing attempt, but they didn't catch my hacker. Still, there's something we can learn from his analogy that security is like an onion.
And what's that?
We can add layers of protection, too. Mm-hmm. Like, after I got hacked, I turned on two-factor authentication, which sends a code to my phone when somebody logs into my account from a new device. That means a hacker needs more than my password to access my account. They need my phone, too.
Another layer of the onion. So you started with hardware hacking, and then you got phished. And now we're talking about data breaches at big companies. And Amazon says, hey, they've got you covered at least on their end. That's a lot to think about. Now I need you to help me understand which of these many things I should actively worry about.
Well, I brought in Adam Shostak to help me with that. He's a highly regarded member of the security community, and he's an expert in something called threat modeling. I told him what we'd been doing, you know, trying to find a way into an echo from every possible angle.
So let me start with what you're doing and use that to bridge to the point of should we be worried?
Okay.
What you're doing is actually threat modeling. What you said is I have an echo device here and we're taking it apart. We're thinking about physical access. We're thinking about ways in which people can break in. And what threat modeling adds to what you're doing, or what formal threat modeling adds to what you're doing, is a degree of structure so that we think about each component of the device and say, what could go wrong here? We think about each component of the service and say, what could go wrong?
Oh, I kind of get it.
Right. A threat model is like a list of all possible attacks. Shostak puts all this teaching in a card game, and the deck of cards helps us build the list of possible attacks systematically.
We deal out all the cards, which takes a second.
So here's how we played Shostak's game. On a piece of paper, in the middle of the table, you draw a picture of a device.
So we've got our echo dot, say.
Uh-huh. You've drawn a little rectangle for the dot.
I've drawn a little rectangle for the dot, and I've drawn a line, and I've drawn another box called Amazon.
And then you draw bubbles off it, showing all the different devices and systems that it interacts with. Like, there's the smart microwave that your Echo talks to. And here's the cloud where the Echo stores its data. But there are more parts than that. For example, there's something called a parser.
And a parser is the thing that takes apart your voice, translates it into text, and then issues out the commands.
And there's the wires that carry those signals between the cloud and your home. And here's where the fun part comes in. The cards have different suits, and each suit represents a different category of attack.
So there are repudiation cards,
elevation of privilege cards,
and denial of service.
So spoofing,
pretending to be someone or something you're not.
It sounds like a poker game getting underway.
Kind of. And then one player at a time, you start playing cards against your chosen target.
So, I'm going to start out by playing a card, the King of Information Disclosure. And the threat on this card is an attacker can read network information because there's no cryptography used. And so I'm going to look at the system here. I'm going to connect and say, you know, Amazon probably has some cryptography in use between the device and Amazon. But I wonder what's happening inside their cloud. I wonder what's happening between Amazon and the parser. I wonder if they're doing cryptography there or not.
Or what about between the third party that collected the information, such as Capital One, and their, you know, in their other internal file servers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question.
Is it fair for me to even think about the Capital One breach when looking at possible vulnerabilities of the Echo Dot when, you know, the information didn't really originate with the dot?
I think it depends what you mean by fair. My goal in helping people learn to threat model is to help them put some structure around the way they think about computer security problems. My goal in creating a game is to tell you it's okay to think creatively, to think outside the box, to play, literally, to explore ideas.
This reminds me of all the hackers that you've met along the way and how much fun they all seem to be having.
Yeah, they were having fun. I went back and forth with Shostak playing cards like the Queen of Spoofing and the Ten of Elevation of Privilege.
Was there an Ace of Nitwits?
A what?
Well, it's a reference to a book I read when I was a kid. I'm still looking for that card.
Well, with each of these cards, we learned a little bit more about the vulnerabilities a device like the Echo Dot could face.
Does anyone win in this game?
No, though Shostak says some of his friends do play it for points. It's more about thinking through each different attack scenario.
And then when we're done, we can say, okay, we've walked through each of the pieces of the system. We have a set of possibilities. And now we can go to your question of, should I worry?
And what does he say? Should we worry?
Well, one thing I've learned from talking to Shostak is that there are no clear black and white answers here. There's no, you must worry about this, but not this. Because in talking through the hacks, you also have to explore the motivation of the hacker and the effort that the hack involves. And a lot depends on who the target is and who's financing the hacker.
If you're a political operative and your hacker's being paid by the Russian government, then it might be worth it.
On the other hand, phishing attacks are much easier, and they're cheaper, too, to perform. A little customization of that email goes a long way, if the hacker attains a wide list of targets with similar interests. For example, a list of all public radio employees in order to pitch them great deals on recording equipment. Then that might be worth a hacker's time.
Ah, come on. There's no profit in selling to public radio types. So to the question, should I worry? I'm hearing it depends.
Right. But there was one moment of black and white clarity that Shostak offered. As a security researcher, he's made the determination not to install smart home stuff in his house.
For me personally, I'll tell you what I do. I don't have things that record inside my house. I tend not to have a lot of very smart devices because as a security expert, I'm going to come under attack by people who just want to laugh and say, yeah, I broke into this thing in Adam's house. I said I have weird friends.
Jack Koziel, the guy who fished me, doesn't have smart home stuff for the same reason.
I can see a couple of things that strike me as concerning here. Most of us are never going to be interesting enough to warrant anyone turning our home devices into little spies, or even little attackers. But yeah, if you're like Koziel and you run with a crowd of hackers, or even if you're a public person, you could be a target.
Amazon's trying to put Alexa everywhere, basically. You know, they're putting her in earbuds. They're trying to put her in hotel rooms, trying to put her in cars, right?
But what's to stop black hat hackers from finally succeeding in breaching, like Amazon's cloud? What's to stop them from making a public statement by using that to hike up all of our collective thermostats, or by telling Alexa to play the theme from Frozen at top volume in everybody's house? That would start to affect our trust in the technology and in Amazon.
If the breach is when the data is still controlled by Amazon, then that would strike at the core of whether we trust the company.
You know, the hacker that succeeds in hacking Alexa big time, hacking all of our Alexas, could also succeed at harming not just the trust, but, you know, frankly, the promise of the technology to make life easier. And that's, I think, my greatest concern of all. This is our final episode of Season 3 of Primed. Thank you so much for listening. In this season, we've raised lots of questions that Alexa can't answer, like how your kids should interact with AIs, or whether Alexa can help people live better and longer. We've taken you inside Amazon's secret smart apartment and the packaging lab where it stress tests all those boxes and envelopes. It's been fun, and we've learned a lot. I have to say, though, I don't feel we're quite done with Amazon yet.
So one thing we want to know is if you, as listeners, still have unanswered questions about Amazon. Like, what do you still want to know? We've got an email address. You can send it to primed@kuow.org, or you can go to our webpage and find other ways to contact us there.
Yes, that would be great. Thank you so much for listening. Primed is a production of KUOW Public Radio in Seattle. It's hosted by me, Carolyn Adolph.
And me, Joshua McNichols. Our producer is Alec Cowan. Our editor is Carol Smith. Our executives are Jill Jackson and Brendan Sweeney.
Music this week by Raymond Scott and Alec Cowan. You can find links on our website. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening.